The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We're here to continue our expectations series today. A couple good players for you today, Marlon Humphrey and Daniel Faalele, players who certainly may have an impact on the Ravens 2024 season. Here to discuss them with me is Michael Crawford. Mike, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Always good to talk with you. I appreciate you inviting me on to be a part of this and looking forward to talking about these two players.
There's literally no series of shows I do, no regular season where I don't want to include you in every type of show I'm doing, Mike. The pleasure is all mine. The favor is yours giving me to be here. So let's start with the aperitif here and start with Daniel Faalele in this case. In terms of him, third-year player, I think he has not quite yet shed that developmental tag.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. He's still squarely got that label applied to him. It's funny, as I was looking at some things to kind of, you know, prep for this a little bit, just sort of the feeling of it before I actually looked at the actual snap counts, I felt like he played a lot more in 2023 than he did in 2022, but he didn't. It was only like 19 more snaps. I know he had a start back in 2022, so that probably helped bump the number up a little bit that first year. But I guess because he was in that rotational role and maybe we saw him more often, I want to say he was in 13 games. Offensive snaps, I'm talking about now, not special team snaps. 13 games in 2023, as opposed to, I think, six in 2022. So we did see him more often, but the overall snap count wasn't as different as I thought it would be.
I got the same as you, 13 games, and he had 10 or fewer snaps in seven of those games. So a lot of that, he's playing as a sixth offensive lineman, but or he was in for, you know, a series, say, right, or two. But, you know, Faalele is a guy I've talked a lot about on this show, but I want to get the numbers right because sometimes I estimate them I have them as I recall them, but is the last 92 regular season snaps he played, he collected a total of 66 points by my system, which is 0.72. That is such it's not a great number. It's a C. It's solid, right in the middle of the C range after adjustment is how I would discuss it. But it's such a sharp deviation from what he'd done early in his career. Even though it's a small sample size, it almost leads one to get excited about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling somebody earlier today, I think I'm probably not as, and this is just the perception that I get from basically Twitter, I'm probably not as down on him as the consensus, just because I had to I was just working on one of these little projects that I do. You know, I do a bunch of stuff just for me. Like, it never even sees the light of day, where I went back and cut up all of his snaps from this year for the games where he played, you know, a bigger number of snaps, not like the one or two or three snap games. And just when you watch him sort of back to back to back like that, you probably find this too. I know I find it a lot with watching film. It's never as good as you think it is. It's never as bad as you think it is. It's usually somewhere in between. And you come away, particularly when I was watching Falalele, thinking, man, he has those two or three plays a game that are like disaster type plays, where either he gets beat fast and Lamar gets hit, and, you know, a turnover is also maybe in play at that point. But other than that, it's not like disaster throughout the game. You know what I mean? There's some really, really bad ones. And then everything else, like you said, is kind of right at that average to maybe slightly below average level.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. And obviously that's frustrating, because it's the position he plays is a frequency and severity of error position. It's a lot like being maybe a relief pitcher or a closer, or even a starting pitcher that gives up a lot of home runs. You know, you get a lot of outs, and then you gave up three home runs, and two of them were with two guys on base. You know, that's not going to do it. In Falele's case, I get frustrated not only by the ultimate result, which is improved somewhat. I'm also frustrated by the means in which he gets there. I'm extremely frustrated that a man his size does not use his size well, or even really try to use his size.
Yeah. It's something that you would think it would be more intuitive. Like, hey, mm-hmm. I know I'm a massive dude, and that's what I'm going to play to. But he's almost like a massive dude who wants to play like a smaller dude. And it's like, there's no need to do that, right? Lean into who you are and what you are. I mean, obviously the Orlando Brown Jr., you know, comparison is kind of the first thing that comes to mind, because he was here, number one, and he's of similar size, even though I think Falalele might be bigger. And you're like, you know what? If you just, I don't want to derail us. I'm not going to do that, because I will derail us. Just play to your size. I don't want to get too technical with it, because I'll do exactly what you asked me not to do. But just play to your size. Play to your strength. Your strength is your size. You have unique size, arm length, hand size, right? That stuff is on the top end of the spectrum in terms of measurables. So just lean into that.
Yeah, just the unwillingness to strike first. You know, a desire to get into a position where he's almost overcompensating for his lateral movement in his feet by trying to stay upright and balanced left to right, back to front. And in so doing, he's giving up a lot of ability to strike and take that pass rusher off his plan. And I there's more ways that it affects him than that. We can talk a little bit about this, Michael. It's really okay. I don't want to make you feel like you can't get in any deeper discussion. But one of the things I think it affects him is he's a really bad 12 to 6 blocker, despite the fact that he's a guy who should have all the length, all the hand size, and all the ability to get a guy there. But when you don't off balance, you don't get that pass rusher off balance to start with, just make him work a little bit to get around the pocket. It makes that very, very difficult.
Okay. Since you've given me the green light, here's what I will say. A couple things. When you're that big, when you have the kind of unique size that he and guys like Orlando Brown Jr. have, and I've heard Orlando Brown Jr. talk about this when he kind of gets into like the nitty gritty of blocking, particularly pass blocking. He says for him in particular, because of his size and movement, it's all about angles, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about angles for him. And essentially, the longer he can stay square to the line of scrimmage, the more advantageous that is for him versus the rusher. Because just my sheer mass, it's going to take you more time to try to get around me if I can stay square. When I turn my shoulders, I shorten the corner. I soften the edge for you as a rusher. So now not only have I given you an advantage in that sense, like a physical advantage, also in terms of time, right? I'm not giving myself the same time, because obviously time is going to be your friend, right? As a pass blocker, the longer that you can keep that guy running the hoop or out there dancing or doing whatever he's doing before he can try to get engaged with you and get back to the quarterback, the better that is for you. The last thing I'll say about it is, you get these different schools of thoughts in O-line play, right? You listen to some of these, like, you know, legendary offensive line coaches like Howard Mudd, you know, God rest his soul. You know, he's passed a couple of years ago. His philosophy was all about taking the fight to the pass rusher.
Right.
Get your hands on them first. He would always say the quickest way to lose is to set back. Right. As soon as you do that, you're setting yourself up for failure. But then you listen to a guy like Jeff Stoutland, the Eagles offensive line coach, been there a long time, another really great guy. One thing he teaches his guys is don't give them your hands. Keep your hands back for as long as you can, because what are rushers taught to do? Attack your hands, right? I think even Mitchell Schwartz talked about this. Sure. The way that they win is by capitalizing on mistakes that you make as a blocker. So right. Stoutland's thing is the longer you can keep those hands back, at some point, those guys are either going to show they're going to throw their move, whatever their move is, or they're just going to try to bull rush you. And if they try to bull rush you, his thing is get your hands in, get them under, and drop your anchor. So, you know, you get these different schools of thoughts. And I wonder where Falalele is mentally with all that. Like, he could obviously do what you're saying, and I think help himself some more by maybe not all the time striking the guy first, jumping the guy, getting on him quick, but use it, you know, to keep guys off balance. Where you do it sometimes, they don't really know where it's come in, you know, that kind of thing.
Okay. Now, here would be my thought on the two schools of thought and how they're opposed. I think it's extremely dependent on the quality of the lineman's feet. I think if you're lead footed, and, you know, obviously Orlando Brown is not the most nimble guy. He probably falls in the bottom half of left tackles in terms of his feet quality, where he is there. In terms of right tackles, he was probably okay, but it's still nothing special. What he does depend on is blocking 12 to 6 when he loses that edge. And I think if you're Ronnie Stanley and you can dance with whatever pass rusher they can put up against you, you can constantly play that give ground, maintain mirror, give ground, maintain mirror, and play that game. I don't see it with a player like Falalele. I think he's giving up so much in terms of not striking that it's a big difference. And maybe Brown is truly in the middle, but between Stanley and Falalele in terms of how much his feet can help him in terms of continually to outmaneuver that opposing pass rusher. And the understanding of the angles and the way that he talks about it shows at least an understanding of that that may have come from Ronnie Stanley originally. It may have come from Ronnie and the way, you know, he saw him play on the left side.
Yeah, and another thing I'll say about that is you wonder with a guy like Falalele, and one of the things that stood out, I'm sure you saw it too, is he does have real struggles when he has to react and redirect and recover. So I wonder, somewhere in the back of his mind is that thought that if I strike early and miss, I'm really going to be in a bad way with having to recover against this guy. But that's why I said it's not something you never do. It's not something you necessarily always do unless you were playing for Howard Mudd. Other than that, it's sort of a changeup, right, that you sort of mix in throughout the game. And the thing with, you know, when you don't use it and you kind of do set back and you take your normal two or three kicks, it's so important for those big guys. I know I harp on it all the time, to stay square for as long as they can. Make these guys run around you, because your advantage is your size. If they can't get an edge on you, then they've got to come through you. And then that's where you have the advantage. So stay square for as long as you can and make them come to you, and then just absorb them. When they try to come into you.
Well, that should obviously be where Falalele is at his best, at absorbing a bull rush. And obviously the question comes if he gets beat to either side. And you may have diagnosed what the issue is that it may be a mental problem, or it may be something that he truly can't overcome. And the coaches are saying, you know what? We agree with you, Daniel. You play it the way you want to play it here, with more hands up, ready to react, and less punch first kind of thing. It could well be that. I'm going to go ahead and say what he's done so far has not worked in 2 years. He hasn't shed his developmental tag. The only thing I can really point to in terms of positive play is the last 92 snaps of the regular season last year. Before that, his career, he'd put up a .46, which is about as bad as you can get and still be on an NFL roster for all of his other snaps combined. So if it's probably a case of no single solution is always the best solution. But I also think there's some of this that You got to somehow do something different when your feet aren't good enough, and he's not doing something very different with what he's doing. So I could see either way. And it's great having you on to give the other side of this coin, because I'm very much in the mud camp, clearly, in terms of, being an attacking guy. And you do a good job of articulating the other argument. Let's change focus a little bit. How about Falele, the run blocker? Do you feel like he's done enough so far to finish blocks?
Could certainly improve in that area. And I'm not saying that he's got to like pancake and like, you know, jump on guys and like Superman them on every, you know, at the end of every run block, but just kind of staying engaged, right? Kind of that classic line, you know, finish what you start. So you engage the guy and you stay engaged, right, until the runner has made his cut or is, you know, is picked his direction and he's passed you. I do still see him fall off blocks, maybe a little bit more than you'd like to see. And, you know, I think he's improved from his first year to his second year, as you would expect with experience, positioning on run blocks, sort of knowing where he needs to get to and the footwork he wants to use to get there, right? Being more efficient with the footwork that he chooses to use to get to whatever that landmark is that he needs to get to. Still ways to go. It's certainly not, you know, a finished work. But I saw, you know, a little bit better at times. You see little things that, again, I'm getting probably overly like O-line nerdy, but you see little things where he'll use like a high leg gallop, right? Where you stay square and literally think about pretending to, when you're a kid, you're pretending to ride a horse and you're kind of galloping up and down like that, mm-hmm. right? With your feet. It allows you to stay square to the line of scrimmage, keep your base in terms of keeping the width of your feet, but then still move laterally side to side, as opposed to turning your shoulders more perpendicularly in a more severe angle and your feet getting closer together and narrower because you're trying to run on that angle. You can do both, but I like that sort of shuffle gallop because, again, when you have size as your advantage, staying square for as long as you can, even on run blocks, is to your advantage.
Yeah, that logically, that sounds very good to me. And getting to level two, Falele has not been a guy who's put linebackers on the ground or put defensive backs on the ground. And I wouldn't even necessarily want him to be that. I think if he can maintain his feet the way a lot of wide receivers can and be good run blockers, I think that's ideal, obviously, because he's an enormous monolithic man to get around. And I don't care who you are, whether you're a linebacker or a defensive tackle, or an edge rusher, it's hard to do. What I do want to see him do in terms of finishing blocks more is really more a lot of the double teams and down blocks at the line of scrimmage. Finish those. Boy, for one thing, playing defensive line is exhausting. It is just you're an overweight guy to start with when you're doing it. Okay. And then you have an even more massive human being, you know, knocking you around and oftentimes two of them if you're a defensive tackle. And it shows up in the snap count all the time. Those guys can't play all the snaps because of how tired they get. Well, make him feel some of that extra tired and really try and finish that block. Ride him, keep going, make him lose his feet if you can. It won't be a holding call in those cases. In fact, you know, the only time you really got to be worried about disengaging from a block as an offensive lineman is when you're on the edge of the play. And it's not an easy thing to be – have the understanding of exactly where you are in the play, but it's something where, you know, there's really good reason to finish a down block that you're making if you don't have an assignment to move up to finish there.
Yeah, you can't let that guy cross your face when you're kind of the outside edge of the down. You're the down blocker, right? Yep. You're supposed to be walling this guy off. Before you climb to the second level, or if you don't climb, I know one thing Joe D talks about all the time is pound the downs, stay on the down lineman first. And basically we'll take that guy to the linebacker or make the linebacker come to us and then maybe try to come off, as opposed to you see sometimes guys just give like a hand check almost and just push the guy and then immediately climb. And you kind of hang your post blocker out to dry a little bit when you do that. So I think, and I know years ago you had Matt Skrull on. I think he did a obviously a much better job than anything I could do because he's played. explaining some of the intricacies and the nuances of those combination blocks and how you communicated, even nonverbal communication, when you stay, when you go, you know, how thick you get on the block versus, you know, maybe you're taking more of an edge so that the other guy can grab more of the rusher, of the defender. There's all kind of intricacies in that, that I do think it can take time and experience. And you got to be working with the same guy, right? Because again, if you're working with different guys, if you're not getting consistent, you know, repetitions, it's almost like starting over each time. So I do think that's a factor, not to make an excuse for it. Certainly don't want to come across as if I'm making excuses.
All right. Well, let's move ahead a little bit to this year. Roger Rosengarten drafted by the Ravens at 62. Maybe a little bit of reach. Obviously, the Ravens are going to have to do some reaching. Tackle is a position like quarterback where you have to end up reaching for players in terms of their probably their relative quality as football players when you get right down to it. But those positions are in higher demand. They're in higher demand because they're more important, and you have to reach for a player like him. How do you see the right tackle competition playing out this camp?
Well, the way I thought about it for this exercise was like, because we were, you know, talking about Falele specifically, best case scenario for him, right? He wins the job outright. This is the best case scenario for Dane, clearly. Maybe an in-between outcome is it's similar to last year. He's in some sort of rotational committee type of role, maybe not necessarily because of injury like he was with Morgan Moses last year. Maybe it's because, you know, you're trying to ease Rosengarten in a little bit. Yep. Something like that. Okay. Not ideal to still be in that role, to still have that label at this point of your career, but you're not necessarily in a situation where you're unsure of what your status on game day is going to be. That would be even worse. And that would be the worst case scenario, is you don't know if you're going to be up or down on game day because, you know, the coaches just don't see you as necessarily being an asset in that way. So I don't know. I think a lot of people think because Rosengarten was a second round pick that it's sort of like a coronation sort of situation, right? Like he's going to become the starter at some point this year, maybe even as early as coming out of training camp. Or maybe it's an Orlando Brown Jr. situation where James Hurst starts for a couple games and then Rosengarten takes over. That seems pretty likely to me. So I would probably lean towards that. You can tell I've been reading this book called Super Forecasting. They talk about, to be an accurate predictor, you should work in ranges more than like specific predictions. So you can see mentally I'm working through different ranges of outcomes in my head.
I love that, by the way. We have a technique in actuarial work that I termed goal posting, where you pick two things that are similar but not exactly the same and might represent the worst possible or the best possible of an assumption, say. But you're always you should work within a range and not don't there's no need usually to put a post in the ground about what you think somebody's going to be. And that's when people get themselves into trouble with yardage, you know, calls for wide receivers and things like that. Go back to Rosengarten there for a second here. I don't consider it a coronation, but the Ravens have to make progress on their solution to the Ronnie Stanley situation for 2025. If Stanley has a big year, I guess they could re-sign him. It's not completely out of the question, but there's going to be a lot of money. Well, actually, they cut off the last year of the contract, didn't they? So now it's he's gone in 25, so they'll have to re-sign him. If he plays well, he'll probably play himself right out of Baltimore in terms of the price. So I wouldn't think he'd necessarily be here. So the Ravens did not make what I would call a strong play towards a 2-year solution at left tackle. I think there are a lot of guys who fit that mold that all got taken pretty much before the Ravens got a chance to draft. The other guys that they could have had a chance at were really second tier options in Patrick Paul or Kingsley Suamataia. And I like Suamataia in terms of what you do, or Amagaji from Duke, from Yale. Those are guys who you were taking advantage of the 1-year landing strip you had to try and figure out how to get a left tackle for next year. Cause I think they can figure out how to get a right tackle or even bring a guy, a Falele or somebody else who's a stopgap for a year. But it's that left tackle that just is keeping me up nights as a Ravens fan is just, you know, how the hell do they solve that problem without taking a chance on a guy that they think can do it in 25. Do you think that they really believe Rosengarten is that guy based on the fact they didn't have another tackle pick in this draft?
I think they believe he could be. I think something I've had to come to grips with is, despite how much I want them to think about it in terms of this guy is a left tackle. He's not a swing. He's a left tackle. I don't think they think about it that way. I think they think about it in terms of tackles and guard slash centers. I don't think they think about right, left, with some exceptions. I guess you could look at Ben Cleveland and say, that guy's a right guard. They don't play him anywhere else. So maybe with certain people, they make some exceptions. But I think their actions, this is just me, you know, making an assumption based on their actions. Obviously, I don't know anything. It just seems like they think about it more generically. This guy's a tackle. He can play on both sides. He can play on either side if we need him to. This guy's a guard slash center. He can play either guard position. He could even slide in at center. You look at their actions. You look at the guys that they've had over the last few years, and they all have that in their profiles or have done it, even on other teams. When they, you know, when they acquire, you know, free agents who are already in the league, they've done it on other teams. So as frustrating as it is to me at times that they don't seem to, you know, isolate on that type of guy. I mean, Ronnie was what, fourth overall pick, sixth overall pick, something like that. Yeah. If you get up that high, then yeah, you have the luxury to be able to do that. But I think because they've not been that high, maybe that's something that factors into this viewpoint of, we're just looking at tackles and guards slash centers. We're not getting caught up on right left.
Okay. Well, I mean, they had Jonathan Ogden for a long time, so that took the question completely off the table and after drafting him before, and they've had Ronnie Stanley for a long time. So there's not a lot of Ravens history where they've had to directly face that question. Most of the guys you draft coming out of college, they have some experience at left tackle if they play tackle in the NFL. Yeah. Most of them. Not all, most. But it's a difficult question. I mean, that position is obviously is clearly very important, to keeping your primary asset healthy. And, I was really bothered by how little they did this last time around. And maybe it's just a matter of if they drafted Rosengarten and a right tackle, a guy who I'd never had any hope was going to play left tackle, I might've liked that better. In terms of that, they are getting short on roster spots at tackle, which is one thing we need to talk about is they have five guys now who seem to be in the tackle competition. How do you see them? Do you see them carrying all five of those guys in terms of Stanley, Rosengarten, Jones, McCary, and Fa'alele?
No, I don't think so. I think there's going to be at least one odd man out in that. And again, I try to just infer things from their actions, right? What they say about the stock market, past performance is the best predictor of future results, whatever. They haven't, Tibby, and you would know this off the top of your head better than me. Have they carried that many tackles into a season before? Well, in recent, I'm not going all the way back, but like in recent years.
They've never really been faced with this particular problem, which is they have some versatile tackle and inside guys on the roster at the same time, along with some extra tackles. So having Jones, a guy they might play at guard, and McCary, a guy who can, in theory, play a lot of different positions, but has really been predominantly a backup left tackle these last couple of years. I'm not sure they might treat it differently. Now, they're not going to have all those guys active on a single game day, but they could be on the roster. Could they have four primary interior linemen with Jones and McCary both being backup interior linemen? I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. And I think that's another reason why they like that, why they like the more generic sort of, because of the flexibility it gives you on game day. I guess going back to COVID when they first allowed you to carry, was it two extra guys you can activate now on game day? I forget what it is. If you have a certain number of offensive linemen, right, you can now bump up.
And like a third quarterback. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have eight linemen, yeah.
So I wonder if that has factored into some of their recent thinking, like, hey, the more of these guys we get who can play multiple positions in a game, not just like hypothetically, like in a game, he can play here and then he can play there. It gives them more of that game day roster flexibility, maybe. I don't know. Well, Rosengarten, I should throw this out. I mean, people probably know. I'm sure they've heard it, but he did play left tackle. Played left tackle in high school, was even a left tackle at Washington early on until Michael Penix came. And with Michael Penix being a left-handed quarterback, his blind side is the right side. So they move Rosengarten over to the right tackle. So he's not a guy who's never played right tackle. Obviously, he's not done anything in the NFL yet. But he does have that in his background.
Yeah, and absolutely true. And he's got a left tackle's body, if ever there was one, in terms of he doesn't quite have the ideal arm length is the only thing, but doesn't really have a great anchor, but has the fantastic mirror. If he can't make it at left tackle, I don't know why I would think that he'd be a particularly good right tackle, because he's going to be a finesse guy. Mm-hmm. So he's going to have to, play it that way. And that's just a lot harder, I would think, in particularly for a team that wants to run the football. It's going to be, there's going to be a lot of focus on what he's doing on that right side in terms of helping the run game. I'm skeptical of the pick. I thought it was kind of a reach pick, and I would have preferred if they reached for somebody in the first round, but honestly, the guy probably would have taken it at there was a question to take versus Wiggins at number 30 would have been Suamataia. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a tremendous reach, because they could have had him in round two. He was right there.
Yeah.
So just kind of pissed that they let him get to the Chiefs and get Rosengarten.
Yeah. Apparently there's a story that, was it the Chiefs or the 49ers, or maybe both, would have potentially come up to take Rosengarten in the second round or something. I can't remember the story. He was telling it, or the media was telling it. Somebody was telling it recently, where they were trying to infer who, because I think DaCosta talked about it. And then people were trying to infer, okay, who are these teams that he's talking about? He said there were these teams who were interested in trading in front of us, and they were going to take Rosengarten. I don't remember the particulars, but something like that.
All right. They had a bunch of, trade offers to the Ravens for the 30th pick. I know that, but they had 8 separate offers, he claims. I'm sure he's telling the truth. It's just after the fact in the draft, there's not a lot of point in lying about it. I mean, there really isn't. It just brings your own credibility into question. Let's go back to Falalele for a second. What's a good season for Daniel Falalele?
Okay. I didn't know how specific you wanted to get with this. I think in years past, I've been like really generic. But if you wanted something more specific, here's what I did. So I looked at what he did last year, right? And I looked at the games where he had close to 50% of the snaps. I want to say there was only like 3 of those games where he was like 48% or more. So in my mind, good would be, let's say I double that, right? Or even a little more. Let's say I have 6 to 8 games where I play 50% of the snaps or more, right? Offensive snaps. And maybe mixed in there, I have like 2 to 4 games I actually start. That would be an improvement over last year, right? It wouldn't be, okay, he's become your starter per se, but it would be an improvement over last year. And so I would categorize that as a good season for him.
Okay. Any other quality of play, things you want to see, specific improvements?
Oh, there's definitely improvements. again, I'll try to be brief because I talked about some of this stuff before. So I won't rehash those. But one thing I think I didn't say, eyes. Very important, right? Your eyes, very important. I heard Jeff Stoutland say this, because I've listened to him in a clinic recently with offensive linemen. The biggest transition from college to the pros is how they use their eyes and how they use their hands, in his opinion, because things are happening so much faster, particularly if you're an interior guy, obviously. But even at tackle, the quality of athlete that you're facing week in and week out, they're literally the best in the world at what they do week in and week out. And so, the more disciplined you can be with your eyes, the more you can use your eyes to your advantage to help you identify things before the snap and even after the snap, right? Game stunts, post-snap movement, blitzers coming, from off the line or delayed, the more things you can do to train your eyes. There was a coach that used to say, hey, if you see a lot, you don't see anything, but if you see a little, you see a lot. So you got to get more disciplined with how you use your eyes.
Huh. Now, this is really interesting, because Ben Powers, was on the show last year, and he actually, I guess it was 2 years ago. And he said that where he kept his laser focus was on the top of the right number of his opponent, because he knew he couldn't get head faked in, and knew other things couldn't happen. And a lot of how picking up stunts and blitzes and whatnot was a feel thing. Okay. So he didn't really go further into the description of that. But I mean, I don't doubt that, he's scanning pre-snap like any good lineman would, and to try and figure out what's going on. And then at the snap, he's very focused on the guy opposite. And obviously, if there's a spin move or anything, it's going to take that number out of where it needs to be. But really a very different viewpoint in terms of how you're doing. You're not dropping your eyes into some lazy focus where you broaden your field of vision to look for potential stunts and twists, as you or I might think it might work. At least, you know, a very good pass blocker is saying that.
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not implying be lazy with your focus. I'm saying be disciplined with your eyes. Well, make sure that your eyes are in a specific place. And I think, you know, they obviously, you know, have different coaching points on that, on, okay, if you're going against this rusher or we're going against this team, maybe we want to look here, we want to look there. But I think to his point about Phil too, kind of wrapping that in, I think each guy kind of has to figure that out for himself too.
Right.
What works for me? Where do I put my eyes that give me the best opportunity to get to where I need to get in terms of being able to feel these different things that can happen post-snap, or having that landmark, like you said, where you're targeting a certain landmark. So for him, it sounds like he had identified that spot. Like, hey, that's what works for me. If I'm looking at that spot, it allows me to do this, this, and this, and I can eliminate a bunch of other stuff. I don't even have to worry about it. So no, I agree with him on that. I think you do have to be more disciplined with your eyes. You can't just kind of be like all over the place. And sometimes I wonder with Falalele, I obviously can't see his eyes when we're watching film, but right. It almost is like things are still moving too fast. Right. It hasn't slowed down. And I think sometimes you're seeing everything, right? All this movement, you're seeing this, you're seeing that, but you're not seeing anything really because there's too much. You're not focused enough.
All right. Other things for Falalele you need to see?
We talked about the redirect and recovery sort of thing. Obviously that's a big thing because you're going to get beat. You're going to get yourself in some bad body positions or some disadvantageous positions.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high potency gummies, top shelf flower, home baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary. You can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So being able to recover to at least lose slowly at that point, right? Maybe you don't recover to the point where you can like truly win the block, but you at least lose slowly and you don't have a guy like burn the edge past you and get a strip sack. So, you know, maybe, you know, some more work in that area. And then I think he's done this already in terms of his weight management. I think we saw that from his rookie year to this year, but just kind of continue on that path of finding a weight that allows you to play full snap load and not have like a significant decrease in performance. I think everybody loses a little bit of something throughout the course of a game, unless you're like an elite guy, but something where you're not falling off a cliff because you just don't have the aerobic capacity, you know, to do it. I think he's been on that track and he's made improvements in that area, but just, you know, let's just stay on that path. You know,
I you know, you do hear it said, he's just not a fat guy, right? Despite, you know, weighing upwards of 370 pounds. He's really not a fat guy. I'll go ahead with my good season. I'm going to just be as quick as I can with this because you've said a lot of good things here. I'd say plays well in the preseason. I think it's actually very important for him. A lot of players, it's really important for it. In fact, the thing that I'm finding, the wide receivers and the cornerbacks, the two positions which probably have the highest amount of soft tissue injury, have a lot of young players who need to prove who they are. DeVontez Walker, critical to get preseason reps with Lamar, be healthy for camp so he can build rapport with Lamar. Wiggins and Tampa, in terms of how much they get on the field this year and how much the Ravens can learn about him for 25 to make decisions about Stevens and Humphrey, going to be critical for them to stay healthy. But it's also critical for Falele. I think if he plays well in the preseason, he will at least be the first option to step up if there is an injury at right tackle. And that's how I'm defining a good season. Does not have to win the starting role. Play at the end of the last season does not prove to be a fluke. When he gets the opportunity, which places him north of the replacement level when he sees time. And he would be north of that if he continued at those last four games pace. He becomes a useful piece in jumbo and goal line packages. So I don't have anything about starting in there other than he's ready to go if he's called upon. And I think honestly, if you had to say the best thing for the Ravens would be very different from the best season for Daniel Faalele in terms of a great year he's not called upon.
Right. Absolutely.
We'll go to a great season. What's a great season for Daniel?
I'll keep it short and sweet. He does win the starting job and he starts and plays in all the games.
that is a massive, massive number. So that would be above my 80% percentile ranking of potential seasons he could have, at least as I would see it. I say he starts the season at right tackle and makes the decision to move to Rosengarten or Jones a difficult one for the Ravens coaches, even though seeing Rosengarten is essential to the 2025 plans at left tackle. Even if he is eventually swapped out, he, one, plays well enough that he's consideration for a second opportunity at guard or tackle with seasonal attrition, and two, he secures his 2025 roster spot. We haven't talked about that at all. Daniel Faalele might not make the team this year, but he really might not make the team when the sand is completely out of the hourglass next year and the Ravens don't hold any future option on him.
Yeah, it's a very real possibility. And even for this year, like even if he had that great season, I still think there's better than average chance, maybe even higher, that you see Rosengarten, because even if Ronnie is healthy, which, you know, that's always sort of, you know, an up in the air thing at this point, I don't see why they would go away from the sort of load management approach. I don't know what would have changed from last year to this year that they would go away from that for him.
I could probably tell you what's changed is they don't have two injured players necessarily, one on each side. And even part of it is that I think that they went to the two-sided rotational approach because they didn't want to have it be only Stanley who was being rotated for. I think Moses actually needed it less, although he ended up getting hurt in the season. Yeah. And
played with a torn labrum.
Yeah. And I don't know when that exactly occurred, whether that was, you know, fairly early in the season or late, but he'd be still playing pretty well, honestly, for most of the season. So I think it was fairly late that it occurred. But in any case, the point being that I think, you know, there's a lot of head games being played with the offensive line last year. There was a whole Simpson thing and putting Sala ahead of him, I think, to motivate him and to focus him. Okay, there's the stuff with Ronnie about, okay, you're going to rotate. But, you know, at the same time, Morgan's going through it too over here on the right side. So I think there's a little head gamistry going on there, and that probably helped. I wouldn't call it load management. I'd call it injury management in both cases. You maybe want to see what those guys have, but load injury management is what I would call it.
Yeah, for last year, that probably makes more sense. If it continues this year and we don't hear anything about injury, then I'm squarely in the load.
Okay, fair enough. And you know, you can also put a third category in there is development management. Because if you really want to see Rosengarten, you really want to understand, well, get him in there for some at least.
Absolutely. They had that sort of like what we saw back in the day with Humphrey. Jimmy Smith wasn't injured. He wasn't injured. He was still healthy enough to play, but they were sprinkling Marlon in gradually that rookie season.
Damn straight. And even when Humphrey won the team MVP the next season, he wasn't playing all the snaps. He was still playing some rotationally. All right. Let's see. I gave you my great year for him. Yes, I did. So now let's move on to Marlon Humphrey.
Okay.
Turns 28 in July. I think it would be fair to say this is a crossroads season for him. He is signed through 26, but there's a cut savings for him in 25 of 12.4 million and in 26 of 17.4 million. So we're getting to a point where you really got to earn your money and earn the higher numbers that come later in a long-term contract.
Yeah. If you're fortunate enough, right, to get a second contract, because that doesn't happen all that often with the same team, that's a great thing. And to get that and then to become, you know, I think one of the endeared type of players, right? I think he's really a fan favorite, you know, and obviously there's the injuries and that kind of, but aside from that kind of stuff, I think he's really a kind of fan favorite kind of guy. Certainly became one of my favorite players. I can remember back to when he was drafted, like, this doesn't make any sense. Why are they taking a corner? And then he goes on to have the kind of career that he's had. So, but he's reached that point where you're making those kind of, or you're at least having those kinds of conversations. You're not having to make the decision yet, but you're having those conversations about making those kinds of decisions with a guy like that. And, you know, a little bit of it is sad, you know, from a fan perspective, but it's the business of the NFL. It's the life cycle of the NFL. And it's just the way it goes.
Maybe kind of playing for his Hall of Fame, a Ring of Honor spot. If he finishes this contract, he's pretty much certainly got it. If he were to not finish this contract but play 25, more likely than not, and obviously would really help if the Ravens won a championship in
absolutely
too.
That never hurts.
But anyway, the Ravens go ahead and they draft Wiggins in Tampa. So you know, whether you know, with the way the Ravens have to be careful about spending money, becomes, you know, kind of apparent to me that he and Brandon Stevens are probably competing for one spot going forward, whether that means after 25 or after 24.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you don't take a first round corner to not have them become a starter sooner rather than later. it's not why you do that. And then, you know, we talked about where Humphrey is contractually, age-wise, that sort of thing. You've also got Brandon Stevens, you know, younger, not at that same stage of his career, but this is last year he's under contract, 24?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, so, you know, there's decision that has to be made there, and I'm sure there have been negotiations and talks probably. I can't remember if he said they were or they weren't, or he just leaves that up to his agent because he was asked. But I'm sure that there's been something there. But yeah, you're getting to a numbers crunch and a cost crunch situation. And you know, you're going to have to make that decision. I think what helps Humphrey a little bit, you know, obviously if he can get back to health and form, having that flexibility we'll probably talk about, right, to be able to play inside and outside.
There might even be one more spot. We'll get to that. But last year,
safety, don't say it.
Obviously, he played 13-0-0 and 13 snaps in the final four games of the series. That's Miami, the Pittsburgh game, which didn't matter. Zero was the right number for that game. But then the Houston playoff game, he didn't play any. In Kansas City, he was only on the field for 13 snaps. I thought his season was still excellent on a rate basis. So he had 40 targets, 6.1 yards per target, one TD, one interception, 69.2 opposing passer rating. There's nothing wrong with it from a rate basis. There were some things that I would have liked to see him do better, but from a rate basis, I thought his season was still excellent.
Yeah, when I was looking back at some of his recent, you know, sort of production, I didn't realize, now take it for what it's worth, I know how people feel about the Pro Bowl, I didn't realize he was a Pro Bowler as recently as 2022. You know, you think about the injuries sometimes and you kind of let that skew your perspective of him. But when you go back and you watch, you know, whether you're watching the film and or looking at the numbers, you see that, yeah, obviously the injuries have been a factor. But in terms of play, when he's on the field and healthy enough to be on the field, there's not been this massive drop off in the quality of performance, as you might expect, you know, with a guy who's dealt with some recent injuries in the last couple of seasons. So especially for a guy who plays corner the way he plays corner, you know, right. He's a physical guy. You don't see as many corners these days who play the position in the style that he plays it with.
Yeah, very, very physical, baseball bat like arms. Honestly, he's the best you can be. He's a better corner, obviously, than JAD. Let's start with this. But JAD and he have some things in common. Humphrey is a little slow to look into the backfield and find the football. He's much more comfortable finding the football at the catch point and defending it there, or knocking it free, or even punching the ball loose afterwards, as we saw a few seasons ago. It's actually been three seasons since he's had any appreciable forced fumbles. I think he had two in the last three seasons after having eight in 2020.
Crazy number.
Absurd number. But his ball skills have been a little short. Even in his Pro Bowl year in 22, he only had seven PDs, and then he dropped off to five last year. Obviously, a lot of that is a function of not playing nearly as many snaps, but he played about half a season worth of snaps this last year and only had five PDs, which is low. That's low ball production.
Yeah, that's why I know we're not quite there yet, but that's in my sort of areas for improvement and probably even be in my good or great seasons in some way or another. More ball production, right? More ball production. I understand that, like you said, I think that's just his play style, right? Targeting the ball more after it's out of the quarterback's hand and at the receiver, literally at the receiver, in the receiver's hands, than when it's in the air and he has an opportunity to maybe make a play on it with an interception or a PD. It's just his style. I think it's his play style. But, I think that there can be some opportunities there for him if he's healthy enough to play more snaps. And in this defense, even though I know, you got to do play caller this year, but, schematically, I don't think it's going to be, significantly different. I think there are opportunities for more ball production.
Yeah. Physicality been the calling card his whole career, and it's more than just at the catch point. Incredibly physical off the line of scrimmage with receivers, and often that leads to opportunity to not get drawn out of a play, to be able to assist somebody else on a play. And we've seen some of that the last couple of years. One thing that has not been as good there is the missed tackle rate, which increased to 16.2% this last year versus a career rate of 11.7%, which is quite good for a corner. That was a little bit frustrating this last year. Now, it's a small sample size always you're dealing with in terms of total missed tackles affecting the thing. You still don't like to see things trend in the wrong direction.
No, you definitely don't, especially for a guy who, being a good tackler, at least being a solid, again, we're talking about corners, at least being a solid tackler, has kind of been, one of the calling cards for him. You definitely don't want to see him, trend negatively in that regards. And I don't know if it could potentially be injury related. I know you talked about the sample size, that could be a factor as well, but you can't help but maybe have a little bit of that age combined with recent injuries start to creep into your thinking, like, is he losing a step? Is he losing an edge a little bit? I don't know. But we'll get an opportunity to see this year sort of where he's at and where that trend line is continuing to go.
Ken, you briefly rebuked me on the notion of Humphrey being a safety, but the Ravens do, after the draft, have quite a stable of outside cornerbacks, four guys really, who that's their position with Tampa, Wiggins, Stevens, and Humphrey. They have JAD there as well, who may or may not make the roster. And they have a couple of different slot guys with Ardarius Washington, who there's yakking about him going to safety again. I don't think he's the ideal tackler to have on the back end, but we'll see. We have Mollett back with the team again, signed it to a contract that would be indicative that he's going to be around for this year at least. And then of course you have Kyle Hamilton in the slot too. How do you see Humphrey being deployed this year?
Well, first let me say, it was a joking rebuke, because
I gotcha.
The reason I do that is because for me, it's always like an indication that you're not good enough to be a corner anymore. And this is why they're moving you to safety. Right. It's sort of a sad realization when you're at that point in your career. I hate to see that for these guys. I mean, but you get to continue to play and maybe even have some success at a different position. So not ruling it out. Certainly not the first time I've heard it. Nard Melton, who I do the Fire Zone show with and who you've had on, he has mentioned it. We've talked about it a little bit this offseason, where he said, hey, I can see it. I could see him making that transition. So I could definitely see that. it's going to be interesting in terms of the role this year. I think, like I said, having that flexibility to play inside and outside, even though I don't know that he's played a significant amount of nickel in a number of years. I think it's been a while, actually. But, you know, like coaches say, if I seen you do it once, I know you can do it again. And obviously he did it for pretty good part of that season where he played it a lot. So we know he's got that in the bag. I could see that because this is always the conundrum for me. I love Kyle Hamilton in the nickel slash low safety slash dime linebacker, whatever the actual positional designation is for him. I really think it's where he's at his best when he's in that role. And so I want him to be there as much as possible. But obviously there are opportunities for other guys to come in, depending on matchups, depending on, you know, the defense that's called. So I think that could actually maybe help Humphrey, where maybe he's playing a little bit less than a full snap load. Maybe they're kind of moving him around based on the things that I just talked about. Maybe he's outside in a certain set. Maybe he's inside versus another personnel group, but he's never playing, you know, 100% of the snaps or rarely. I don't say never, rarely. Play. I think it could actually help him in terms of maybe some of the physical stuff that he's been dealing with recently. And he has the skill in terms of his skill set to be able to do those things. So I could see maybe a little bit, because we saw this a little bit with Jimmy Smith towards the end, right? Do a little bit of move you here, move you there, do a little bit of this, do a little bit of that. I could maybe see a similar trajectory for Humphrey.
Yeah, obviously the Ravens play cover three, which is not the same as moving a guy from corner to safety. But Jimmy Smith, honestly, was a full-time outside corner, never moved to the slot, you know, really never moved to safety. But Humphrey, I mean, for people who don't know, Marlon Humphrey played a lot of slot corner between 19 and 22. That's a 4-year period where he played, you know, a high percentage of snaps in the slot. Here's what I say about moving players around. You don't do it if the player is a marginal player and he can't handle the responsibilities and it's too complicated for him, and there's any indication that's hurting him at all positions he's playing. The prime examples in Ravens history are Michael Orr, you know, being a good right tackle. He moved to left tackle. It was too much for him, and he should have stayed at right tackle the whole time, in my opinion. Or Kemalai Correa, who they asked to play inside and outside linebacker. There's a pretty good one. It did work. The shift did work for Jarrett Johnson. Okay. It really, really worked for Kyle Hamilton, who is a superstar player, obviously, in terms of being able to handle safety or slot corner. I think if they gave him dime responsibilities or even something else, he might be able to do it without a problem. Marshall Yanda, no problem moving around to three different offensive line positions over the course of his career. And I don't think there'd be any problem with Marlon Humphrey. And I think Marlon Humphrey is even the kind of guy that would be very much like Hamilton that you could move on a down-to-down basis. Mm-hmm. Okay. Brandon Stevens, by the way, another guy it really didn't work out for. Find one position, make him be good at that position. But Brandon Stevens had a history of playing a bunch of different positions down-to-down in college. And so they thought, that'll be fine. We'll do it in the NFL too. And it wasn't fine.
No. So,
with Humphrey, I could envision a role where he plays almost 100% of the snaps, is outside on some downs, inside on obvious passing downs when they want to get Wiggins and Stevens both on the field, and then plays a deep safety role when they want to have Hamilton in the box. And maybe, you know, you have those two players on the field, you don't even know how the Ravens are going to line up. That's exactly the beauty of that.
Yep, exactly. So it just aids your disguise that much more. Right. Yeah. Because now you've already got the one guy, right, in Hamilton, where you're never quite sure where he's going to be. And even when he aligns there, what's he doing on that play? Yeah. Right? Is he rushing? Is he covering? What's he doing? You add another guy to that mix who can give you similar, you know, sort of versatility. And now you really got those quarterbacks and the offensive line, you know, everybody's thinking, all right, what is it this? Is it that? So I think that could be pretty cool to have the ability to do that. He seems like a guy who's never been opposed to moving inside and doing different things like that. So I think that always helps when you got a player who's open to wanting to do those kinds of things. Everybody isn't.
Yeah, that's a really good point, by the way, because if I were Brandon Stevens right now, I would have no interest in some sort of multi-positional morphing role. I'm like, hey, this is my contract year. This is my future is based on what I do this year. Leave me a freaking right corner and leave me alone. I'll do my job. And if I'm Hamilton, I already know this is an enormous part of my value for whatever second contract I sign. So I'm not worried at all about a multiplicity of role. And in Humphrey's case, he's made a ton of money and he may also be a player who has to transition. So showing that you could do it could actually increase his value going forward. But I think each of those is a slightly different case. But I think Humphrey is one who should be perfectly willing to do it for pure reasons of the filthy lucre.
Yeah. Yeah. He would be, as you just laid out, probably the best positioned to do it, not just from a skill set standpoint, that he probably doesn't have as much to lose as some of these other guys if they were to try to do it right now. Not Hamilton, excluding him, but Stevens, like you mentioned, for sure. And then obviously the rookies. You know, you don't necessarily want to bring rookies in and move them all over the place like that unless it's a really, really unique, you know, rookie. And I think just from what I've heard thus far, I think they want Wiggins to probably start out outside. Of course, when he's been asked, of course, he's going to say, I'll play wherever they want. I can play nickel. I can do whatever. Of course, he's going to say those things. That's what you're supposed to say. But I think just to ease his transition, at least early on, and obviously his build, you don't maybe necessarily want him in there mixing it up too much on the inside. Humphrey would be the one who I would think of that group that they have right now. If you're going to move a guy around, he'd be the guy that you're going to move around.
Yeah. There's even more going to Wiggins. I mean, I don't want to take away Wiggins' recovery speed. So I want Wiggins in a position where the ball has to travel a while to get there. That's where I want Wiggins in coverage. I think that's where you make the best use of him as an asset. Wes Welker, Edelman, any of the New England guys from the past, obviously they can slip a guy right off the line of scrimmage, and all that 4.28 speed doesn't mean a damn thing.
Mm-mm. Doesn't mean anything in there. It's probably, I've said this before, and you hear other players talk about it too, it's probably the most difficult secondary position to play because of the demands, all the different things that you have to do at nickel. And even Humphrey, who, like you said, played a lot of snaps during those years inside, and I think played well. He had his struggles with those shiftier, quicker guys because that's not really his thing, right? He's more of a linear, you know, a little bit of, I don't want to say, because stiffness is such a negative thing, but he's more of a linear mover. Right.
Physical.
Not a lateral agility guy.
All right. Let's jump right into it. What's a good season for Marlon Humphrey this year?
Okay. So again, similar to what I did with Falalele, kind of looking back at some things that he's done recently. Not necessarily, I'm going to say playing in all the games for great. But let's say we're in the majority of games. We don't miss any more than say 1 to 2 games, maybe due to injury. Right. Hopefully none. But for the purposes of this exercise, I said 5 to 8 PBUs, which is still on the low side. Don't worry, it gets better and great. Mm-hmm. 1 INT, 1 forced fumble, and for what it's worth, not that it matters, you make a Pro Bowl.
Okay. All right. Those are good goals there. It's a good season to be active for at least 13 games, continues to play at a high level in terms of rate, statistics, and coverage. Very important. If that drops off, the emperor has no clothes all of a sudden in terms of what he's doing, because we've already seen evidence of injuries and whatnot potentially eroding his play. And I think he could be in trouble. I have no other specific statistical goals for him. He can get there any way he wants in terms of the rate statistics still being good. But one of the important rates is opposition passer rating, which is heavily dependent on interceptions. So he can get there any way he wants, but it's going to be a lot tougher if he doesn't have any picks.
Right.
Physicality returns with a healthy season, plays where needed, including rotations, so the Ravens can determine how they will assimilate Wiggins and Tampa in 25. Could not be almost anything more important in what he does for the Ravens in 24 than how he helps them figure out who Wiggins and Tampa are. So if that means rotation, great. If that means he's playing three different positions, great. If that means he's, you know, playing 100% of the snaps because they've got soft tissue injuries to a couple of rookies who don't know completely how to take care of themselves yet, that may be the case too, but he has to be the glue that holds the secondary together in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And I think that's probably how he's looked at in that room. I mean, he is the vet leader at this point in that room.
Yeah. All right. A great season.
All right. Great season. Now we get to playing in all the games. We're not missing any games due to injury. We're up to 10 to 15 PBUs. 3 to 5 interceptions, which anything above 3 would be a career high for him in a season with one TD. I'm throwing in a return TD in there, right? We gotta. If this is, we're talking about great, right? So I need you to take one of these balls to the house. 2 to 3 forced fumbles with one recovery, and an All-Pro.
Okay, you're being real specific statistically, and that is so unlike you.
I know. I told you, it's reading this book. It's like forcing me to like, hey, write this stuff down and then, you know, see how it plays out and then go back into what was your process for coming up with those ranges.
Now that's really good. That's really what you're saying. Reevaluate is really good. I'll just give my grades directly. A lot of similarity here, but mine is much more general. Active for 16 plus games. It's okay if he doesn't play in the Browns game. I think it is at the end of the season. Delivers top flight downhill play and some pass rush from slot corner. Is the glue that holds the secondary together with fine rotational play on the outside, complemented by time at either slot corner or split field safety as needs arise. Delivers more turnovers based on second man and off man skills. We've seen him get interceptions that are headed for another man's receiver because he figures it out so quickly. We've also seen plenty of times where he's the second man in and punches the ball free. Sometimes he's the first man and punches the ball free too, but I want to see more of that. And I'll just say at the 80th percentile, I just want him back in consideration for the Pro Bowl. Doesn't even have to get it, but he has to be back in consideration for it based on the type of season that he had. I think that would be a great season.
That would be a very great season. I'd take that.
All right. Michael, such a pleasure to talk football with you. Literally, terrifically high-level conversation, both on the offensive line and in terms of potential usage of the secondary. Kind of one of the interesting problems that the Ravens have to solve, and it should be a lot of fun because it's one where they have more talent than they know what to do with, so to speak, in that secondary this year.
Good problem to have. Those are the type of problems you want to have where you're trying to figure out, man, we've got so many guys we think can be good for us. How are we going to deploy them all? Mm-hmm.
You think they still go out and get one more free safety or former free safety who can handle that split field role like Geno did?
I think so. There's still a couple of those guys floating out there, veteran free agents. I know a lot of people talk about Justin Simmons. I was a big Justin Simmons fan when he came out of Boston College way back in the day. I don't know if financially, if that's the kind of thing, but and it doesn't have to be him. There's other guys who are still out there. But yeah, I could see them kicking the tires on somebody and bringing another guy in.
All right. Tell folks where they can talk football with you or look at anything you're working on yourself online.
Okay. Well, one thing, this is one of these things that I rarely do that I do put out for public consumption. So you can follow it. It's in my pinned tweet on Twitter/X at Abukari, Abukari. Coach Bobby Peters, people may know that name. He does these great books. He's been doing them for a number of years now where he looks at offenses and he studies them and he basically breaks down the different concepts. He diagrams them. He kind of explains some of the nuance and, you know, what they might be doing on, you know, whether it's a run play, how they're trying to block it, the pass play, maybe what the quarterback's reads are. So he gives you more than just like, hey, I'm diagramming these plays. It gives you a little bit more than that. We finally did one on the Ravens offense for 2023. He's done all these other teams over the years, and he finally did the Ravens. So what me and Coach Ivan Evans, who you've had on your show, Sip the Tally,
sure,
decided to do was he lists for each concept all of the plays. He timestamps them. Everything is in there, right? So we cut up all of those plays by concept. So using the same terminology and language in his book, and you can find those on the Deep Cover YouTube channel or on Coach Ivan Evans' Sip the Tally, and they're both under their own playlist. It's going to say something like 2023 Ravens Offensive Manual or 2023 Ravens Offense, and every one of those plays by the name of the concept is there for you to look at. So that's something we just finished doing maybe 2 weeks ago because it was a lot of plays. but we got them all cut up and we got all the videos made. So you can go check those out on check those out on either YouTube channel. And like I said, it's on my pinned tweet on Twitter. So you can check that out at Abukari. And of course, I got to plug the other shows. Deep Cover Podcast with Chris Aguilera and Kerry Stevenson, Fire Zone Show with Denard Melton, kind of in hiatus during the offseason, but we'll be back when we'll be back. So just keep your eyes and ears open and, you know, follow me and you'll get, you know, all the latest and greatest.
All right. Recommend both those guys, Denard Melton, Chris Aguilera. I haven't worked with Kerry Stevenson recently, but Denard Melton has been on the show before and was excellent. And Chris Aguilera was on recently talking about the offensive tackles, and he had Rosengarten a couple spots ahead of me. He had him at number 11. I had him at number 13. So he got his guy, and hopefully that that certainly works out. And that sounds great, what you and Coach Evans are doing together in terms of the film. I'm definitely going to plan to take a look at that, and I'd encourage folks out there who are listening to do that as well. I did want to ask, is what you guys have cut up, does it have your overlay of commentary on that, or does it have what does it have with it?
Mine is straight film. Coach Evans, he provided some commentary. He provided some screenshots of some of the diagram. That are some of the diagrams from the book. So you get maybe a little bit more sort of extra stuff. If you go to his playlist, those first couple of videos, I don't think he did it for all of his videos, but at least the first few. Mine, no audio, no other diagrams, just the straight plays. Because in every one of the descriptions that you'll see on YouTube for all of the videos that I did, you'll see a link to Coach Peter's book. It's not that expensive. I want to say it's less than $20. You will love it. If you're into the X's and O's, if you like, you know, that part of the game, or if you just want to learn more about, it's very easily digestible. It's not like over anybody's head. He's not using a bunch of crazy, you know, football terminology. And it's not that big of a book. I want to say it's less than 200 pages. Okay. You'll absolutely love it. And it's like a compendium. You get that and combine it with the film, and you'll be so much more knowledgeable about what they were doing in the first year of Todd Monken's offense.
That recommendation means a lot to me. I appreciate it, Michael. And I would really take it to heart for the listeners if you want to get deeper into that. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short, hit me up. DMs are always open on Twitter. The expectation series is now fully subscribed, so there are no more opportunities. Sorry about that. But I do have opportunities for the recollection series if you want to talk about a player. The next two we're gonna see on this. The first one may be out already. It was about James Hurst. And that's going to be that'll be a pretty interesting one, I think, for a lot of people. A guy who his story is certainly one of ascension throughout his career, coming from not very much, not playing real well in his early years with the Ravens, and then having a pretty decent 10-year career where he played 150 ball games. And the next one is on Kyle Bowler. So that'll be interesting, I'm sure, too. So it doesn't have to be a great player. Just any player who you want to talk about is fine. In fact, we're trying to not talk about the Ring of Honor guys. You just talk about the guys that are one step lower than that.
James Hurst, one of the first players, Ravens players, you and I engaged on Twitter over. Yep. Either Perryman or Hurst might have been the first one.
Yeah. It had been 2014. I was very excited about his play in the preseason that year and his chance to be the backup left tackle. And he in 2014, he wasn't particularly great, that's for certain, but he was in the preseason. And if you look at the PFF scoring for Hurst during the preseason that year, and I was scoring the games individually by my own methods too, but his grades in that preseason are outstanding. I mean, they're just ridiculously good. You think, how could this have not worked out? But anyway, Hurst had a lot of strange turns in his career, honestly, that we went over. And a guy from Central Mexico did the show with me. And his offensive line knowledge, very impressive, Miggy mm-hmm. Duran. So okay. Take a look at that see if it, take a look for it. It may already be out when you're listening to this, because I think it'll be out as early as Saturday, the 8th of June. So if you missed it, go back and take a look for it, I guess is what I'd say. Michael, can't thank you enough for coming on again. It's always a pleasure. And I said, I knew we were going to try and keep this under an hour, and we didn't do it.
Nowhere close. We had a couple of opportunities, but when you gave me the green light, I said, all right, here we go.
All right, my friend. Thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, it was a blast. Appreciate it, Ken. Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel. Because right now, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tap, also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.